Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everyone. Good afternoon. Welcome to Living and Thriving with Rusty. Looking forward to today's show. I have my dear life coach, my personal life coach, Anne Watring, who's going to talk to us a little bit about what she does, and I'm just thrilled. Also wanted to thank Leona Hosack for my intro little ditty. I think that's fabulous. She did a great job. She's actually one of my students who is living and thriving. So thank you so much, Leona. Anne, good morning or afternoon. How are you?
Hi, Rusty. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, wonderful. I've been on and I wasn't sure if you could hear me at all. So this is so cool, Rusty.
Yeah, it's great. I'm very excited to be doing this. So, and we have quite a few callers on the line here today. So hopefully we'll be able to get to some questions. So do you want to do an overview as to what you do and who you are and all the wonderful things that you offer?
Oh, you're so sweet. Sure. I have a PhD in human and organizational development, and so I'm interested in people, always have been, and particularly the way our minds work in a way that shoots us in our foot when we're trying to do something, accomplish something. And so I've done a lot of study into the unconscious, into brain research, which is so cool. It's this growing field right now that shows us that actually we can change the biology of our brains by changing the way that we think. It sounds really simple, but it's really hard, as you know, Rusty, and I know, and anybody else who's ever tried to make a change in their lives. And so basically what I do as a coach is try to help people hear the stories that they're telling themselves. In other words, the beliefs that they have, the limiting beliefs that they have, the stressful beliefs that they have. And once we get those out, because often we like to suppress those beliefs because they don't make us feel good, and we think by suppressing them, they'll sort of go away.
But so can you give us a quick example as to what a limiting belief would be?
Well, sure. You know, I'm never going to get a good job, you know, that's going to really be able to allow me the kind of lifestyle that I want. You know, I've got an illness. I mean, you and I worked on that, and I've had other clients too. You know, I'm sick. I'm debilitated in some way. That's a real limiting belief.
Mm-hmm.
And to get it out in a way, well, let me just back up for a sec. You know, there's that whole field of study called the power of positive thinking, where, you know, you say affirmations to yourself each day, or you put it on your mirror, or on your refrigerator, in your car. And
mm-hmm.
those are really fine. Those are really good things. And the trouble is that what moves us through life aren't the positive statements that we're trying to remember, but they are the negative ones that we're keeping suppressed and holding down. It's kind of like the princess and the pea. You know, that pea is underneath the mattress, and she is not going to be able to be comfortable until she can figure out where that pea is and get it out of there. And so these beliefs that we're trying to suppress are like the peas. And no matter how much positive thinking you do, until you sort of pull that pee out, and what I like to say is make friends with it, understand what it's doing, what it's there for, then they do go away. And I'd love for you to talk too, Rusty, about, you know, some of your experiences with the coaching, because I know we worked on some of these with you.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, so if you can uncover the story that you're telling yourself, I'm debilitated, or I'm disabled, or I'm sick, or I can't get the kind of job I want, and look at it and sort of get, you know, entertain it. And I have a series of questions that I help my coaching clients with to understand the story, that we can actually change the thoughts and the beliefs so that underneath the mattress there isn't a pee anymore. There's you know, a nice flat place that allows you to move ahead in the way you want.
Excellent. And I know personally it's very successful, but we can talk about that at the second half of the show. What are the tools or resources that you use to help uncover those limiting beliefs?
Well, many, but I think the two that I find the most helpful are helping my client understand what personality type they have. We all have one that helps us navigate through life, and each personality type has a particular way of seeing the world, a certain mm-hmm. you know, set of beliefs. You know, like, for example, my type, I see the world as a pretty dangerous place, and so what I try to do is go around and try to keep myself as safe and secure as possible. Now, definitely there's a place for that, but I also know that that's limiting in itself. That becomes a limiting story. If I'm always trying to be safe and secure, then I don't, you know, jump out and take risks that are, you know, good risks to take. I don't try new things. I stay stuck in relationships, etc. So first, I help my client, you know, sort of see what their way of thinking is based on their personality. And then from there, we start to really look into the beliefs. For example, my belief is I need to stay safe and secure to be okay in the world. And so I use something that's called the work of Byron Katie, sometimes also called inquiry, which is a series of four very basic but powerful questions that you can use that will literally change your neurology and change your belief system so that you're able to see much greater potential where in the past you would be really limited.
Okay. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Sure.
Do you want to use an example? Sure.
Well, how about you want to do it with me, Rusty? This will be fun.
Oh, absolutely. You know I love doing this.
Okay. Well, so either come up with a hypothetical stressful thought that you're having, or one that you know about your personality, or, you know, make it hypothetical or make it real. Let's do real.
Okay.
Are you at all stressed out about this radio show?
Sure, absolutely. I think more nervous than stressed out, but
okay. Well, what's your most stressful thought about the radio show so far? It seems like we're doing well, but what do you
I
have
think
any in
prior there? Prior to launching this, it was a fear of failure, which I mm-hmm. think is a very common theme in most people's lives, stepping outside of that box and having definitely a fear of failure.
Yeah. Okay, great. So the belief there is I'm going to fail.
Correct.
So I'll take you through the four questions. So the first question is it true that you're going to fail, Rusty?
No.
Okay, how did you find the no?
Because it's been extremely successful. We have a full collar board.
Okay, good. Very good. Okay, for the listeners, the second question is, can you absolutely know it's true that you're going to fail? So if Rusty had answered yes to the first question, I'm going to fail, then we would pose question two to her. And basically what we're trying to do is checkmate the mind. We're trying to get the mind to come into the actual reality of the thing. So far, so good. So question three, Rusty, how do you react when you're believing the thought that you're going to fail?
My initial reaction was sweaty palms and having second thoughts about launching this.
Okay.
Really questioning the reasons behind, the motivational reasons behind launching the radio show.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, great. So, fourth question. Rusty, who would you be without the thought you're going to fail? Like, think of yourself, you know, a couple days ago or months ago when you were thinking about this and you were believing that you were going to fail or you thought you might. Who would you have been without the thought, I'm going to fail?
Probably less anxious and sweaty.
Okay. And then let's turn the thought around, which is the last part of this inquiry process, to the opposite of the polar opposite of the thought that you're going to fail. And what would that be?
I am going to succeed.
Okay. And, of course, now this thought is an old one because you
right.
have proved to yourself already that you're succeeding. But how might you have, you know, when you were having the thought about you're going to fail, also been able to find that you were going to succeed? What facts, basically, or reasons can you give that would support that you were going to succeed?
Prior to today, I
yeah.
would say the amount of emails and phone calls and support I've received from not only my fan base, but also my students, my clients, family, friends, just a huge international cheerleading squad.
Cool.
That would probably be the largest component,
yeah.
or largest fact.
So you were able to move forward even though the thought could have paralyzed you, as you said.
Correct.
So give me another reason why you were going to succeed.
Another reason why.
Can you think of any other reasons that were sort of lurking around there that you...
My personality type.
Yeah.
But that's later. there's just really no reason not to, I
right.
think, at this point. There's just
right.
no reason not to.
So let's go back then and just see why you were even having the thought, I'm going to fail. What was that thought trying to do for you, I'm going to fail?
I think it was trying to protect me.
From?
From making a mistake or going into the unknown.
Uh-huh. Which, as you think about it, going into the unknown could end up not in such a great way, or making mistakes isn't always fun. So basically, you know, I would just say to your listeners that we do have these thoughts that are there to help us and protect us, like, I'm going to fail. I mean, in some cases, that might be a really good thought to have because you might seriously have a situation that you maybe we shouldn't do. So they really can protect us, and they can also limit us because look what you've done, Rusty. This is so cool.
Thank you. Thank
yeah.
you.
Kudos
lots of support.
You.
Oh. Absolutely.
Yeah, lots of support, and you're pretty amazing.
Oh, thank you.
So that's, you know, a demonstration. Now, are some of your listeners people who might have celiac disease or that kind of thing? Are those folks going to be on the show today?
Absolutely. We have a little bit of a range of individuals on the show. So I'm looking to see if anybody's asked any questions on the fan page. I don't see any as of yet. So let's talk about more of the services that you offer.
Okay. Well, or what I was going to say is that what's interesting when someone has been diagnosed with an illness or there's a real, you know, difficult situation in one's life, it's still possible to work with the thoughts that one has around the situation or the diagnosis to relieve the stress that comes along with, you know, your imagination about what's going to happen to you or what could happen, that even if it's a factual situation, there's still room to do some mind change.
Absolutely. I know when I was first diagnosed with celiac disease, it was extremely stressful. It was very much an unknown lifestyle change for me, and the resources were so limited at the time. So I think it's great that you're able to empathize with us in that regard. Not only the illness, but also the life-changing process. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Sure. I think the empathetic ear is huge. I mean, just the idea of having somebody who's a compassionate, empathetic listener on the other end of the telephone is huge in this day and age. I mean, we're all so busy, and as much as we want to be good listeners to friends and colleagues and family members, it's really, really hard because we've got our own stressors. So there's a huge place for the field of coaching these days, people who don't need therapy, who don't need to go back and go into their past and discuss, you know, the childhood issues. I mean, there's good reason to do that as well, but there are many, many healthy people walking around today, mentally healthy people who simply just need somebody who will be totally confidential with their information and who has no reason to be worried about what that person's worried about or thinking about. I'm on this end of the line, nothing's going to impact my life that's happening with you, and so therefore I can be very objective and sympathetic in a way that a friend might not be able to be. Somebody said to me, well, why do I need a coach if I have really good girlfriends that I talk to or good friends? And that's a reason, because friends can get are often involved in our situations and care about us so deeply that they wouldn't be able to give the kind of feedback that you might really need in a situation. And
That's one of the reasons I just love coaching, because you really are a true coach. You're not necessarily making them run laps, but definitely the emotional push-ups and the emotional sit-ups are there, and sometimes, and you're wonderful about it. Sometimes you definitely have to hold their feet to the fire and challenge them a little bit and encourage that. And I think for you, you've done a great job, especially with me, in regards to holding my feet to the fire. And it's really, the aspect of coaching is so pleasurable because you watch that growth, and it's like watching my daughter grow in some respects. You know, you see these sparks of change and these sparks of personal motivation, and and all of the new things that they're starting to do. I love it. Absolutely love it.
Well, you certainly are a wonderful example of somebody who you know, I know it was hard. You know, I have a personal trainer for, you know, physical strength and fitness, and you know, it's hard, and the fact that she's standing there just saying, you know, you can do it, it makes a huge difference. So
it's a beautiful relationship, I think, because your friends, I know my girlfriends, as much as they love and adore me, and I love and adore them, there's certain things you're just not going to say, even though you want to sometimes.
Right.
And being a coach, you're really able to offer that service without hurting feelings. I mean, it's a very arm's length, but personal. It's a unique line to walk on,
uh-huh.
If that makes sense. How have you found how would you describe it? That fine line that we walk.
Yeah. Well, it's you know, to me, I feel very privileged and honored that someone would put their trust in me to help guide them basically through unknown territory. I think about, you know, guides in the woods. I mean, because generally, you know, you haven't done something because you didn't know how to do it, or you were too afraid, or whatever, or you didn't realize you want to. But then when you realize that, wow, there's somebody who can basically hold my hand or stand on the outskirts and be very interested, but in a way disinterested in what I want to achieve. I mean, the disinterest is in that idea that if you don't do it, it's, you know, it's no sweat to me. It's just that I want to support you and whatever your agenda is. I think that's another difference between therapy and coaching, is that the therapist will set the agenda, whereas in coaching, the client sets the agenda, and then I will, you know, hold you to your own desire and agenda. Now, sometimes the agenda will change as the coaching goes along, and the client realizes, oh, well, I'd rather go this direction or that direction. So there are adjustments that are made along the way. But I think that for me, back to your question, I love it too. I mean, I love helping people be all that they can be in the world. I just feel like there's a lot of unhappy people walking around, and if we could have a world full of people who are feeling more satisfied with their lives and more empowered, the whole place would be such a better place.
And I absolutely agree with that, and
yeah,
could not be more grateful to have people like you doing what you do in this world. It's every little bit helps, you know, improve the community. And if I remember correctly, you work internationally as well. Is that correct?
Yes, I do. I work with organizations. I've got a team building job coming up in February with an international organization. Does computers, and they've got 12 members of a team, some of whom are in Europe and some of whom are in the U.S., and we're all coming together to work on better communication and what happens when there's conflict, how we can avoid conflict, or how do we work with conflict in a constructive way. So I enjoy doing that as well. I do some couples coaching as well as the individual coaching. And people come to me for, you know, life coaching, personal reasons, and also professional reasons. And usually the two are quite mixed up together, because the underlying limiting beliefs that we have about ourselves in general will pop up, whether in a, you know, a personal relationship or personal situation, or in the workplace. And I also do give talks when invited in. In fact, I have this marvelous relationship with the Cabot Cheese Cooperative, the farmers up there in New Hampshire and New York who make that delicious cheese. They and I have formed a partnership where when I get speaking gigs, I get to bring the cheese along with me, and so my audience not only gets to hear about some idea that I've got to talk about, but also gets to nibble on the cheese, which is, that's pretty cool.
That is really yummy. It is a New England and New York co-op, farmer
co-op.
Oh, okay.
Yep, Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine too?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. Maine, Massachusetts, I think Connecticut and Rhode Island as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to double check, but
well,
it's
good.
Exciting. Yeah. So when you're working with organizations, what do you want to give us some examples as to some of the topics that come up?
Yeah. I know that one group that I worked with, it was an independent school. They were going to undergo another mission and visioning and core values exercise, and I don't know if any of your listeners have ever gone through one of those before, but, you know, it's a lot of work. There's a lot of learning that happens with it, and then you get this big, fat document that just kind of nobody ever looks at again, and it sits there, and actually the work in itself, the activity of doing it is the most powerful. It's not that you then go back and refer to the document, but at any rate, they were doing it again. They had already done it once, you know, like 10 years ago.
That's great.
And so they invited me in to help prep them to get ready for that they were not really very excited about and feeling really discouraged about, because it's so much extra work in addition to what you're already doing in your day-to-day work. And that went really, really well, and they actually had, as a result, a wonderful experience with it. Yes, it was more work, but they felt like that they were doing work that wasn't just going to end up on somebody's desk, but in fact, they really did change their school. They were hoping to up the minority enrollment there, both economic and racially, and in fact, they did, and they are thrilled about that. They'd been trying to do that for years and years and years. So that was really, really successful. Let's see. Well, back to this group that I'm getting prepared to do in February, because they're a distant team, as you can imagine, you know, I mean, they're not together in the same room except through a conference call kind of thing or video
mm-hmm.
conferencing. And it's just really easy to have miscommunication. I mean, it's easy enough when you're working in the actual same office, suite of offices, but, you know, just various different personalities and so on. And so I help them understand their personality types and what their particular way of looking at conflict is. I mean, there's some types who love conflict. It is not mine, I have to say. But some people really, you know, get a lot of energy around that, and other people really will back away. And so if you're all together in a room discussing that, people will have their eyes wide open because they'll realize, wow, what I thought was good communication was actually not good for this particular person, and how can I increase my range of possible actions so that I can work better with this person that I need to work with. And I'm trying to think of some other examples. Well, with one company, I went in and we did this amazing timeline to help them understand where they had been, what had been going on in the world at the time that they were founded, and that they were going through this and that and the other thing. so that they then could be more prepared today for the future, that they could make some difficult and progressive decisions about where they wanted to take their company. Does that answer your question?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, do you want, before we go to a quick break, would you like to give us your website?
Sure. It's my name. It's www.annewatring.com, AnnewotRing.com. I'd love for people to take a look and let me know what they think about it. I've worked a lot on it, and I've gotten into doing some videos on it, and I hope that they'll...
I know. I'm so excited about that. I was watching some of them, and I'm going, woohoo!
Yeah, thank you for your encouragement on that.
Absolutely. You did a great job.
Thanks.
All right, so we're going to take a quick, short break, and I will go and see on the fan page to see if anybody has any questions, and be right back.
Okay.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.
Great little ditty. I love it. What a great story she has. I'm hoping to actually get her on air for one of these shows to talk about it.
It's so cute.
Just one of the many inspirational stories that you have as you coach people through. So we are now down to just a little bit longer on the radio show. There are no questions as of yet, so is there anything particular that you want to talk about?
Well, I was just thinking it would be really cool for you to find a stressful belief that you're dealing with right now, and for us to do it on the show. Or, I mean, I could talk a little bit more about the brain science behind what I do. But I think it'd be kind of fun to for us to demonstrate what it is and you know what you found helpful. I think the four questions for you were pretty profound.
They were absolutely profound, and because we've worked together for so long, I have them tucked away. So I actually, it's one of the tools in my belt that I use on a regular basis.
Why don't you do it to me then?
Oh no! The pressure! The pressure! Can we first talk about the Enneagrams and the personality traits piece?
Sure.
Because that we touched on at the beginning of the show, and to me, I find it very interesting. I was a big fan of the Jungian personality traits.
Uh-huh.
So, and it's interesting to look at them side by side. I think mine was a 6, wasn't it?
Yeah, you and I have the same personality type.
right, which I get a giggle out of. So why don't you describe that, and then I have a couple of questions in regards to that piece.
Sure. Well, basically, the Enneagram, Ennea is the Greek word for 9, and gram is like a diagram or drawing. And the Enneagram itself is actually a circle that has 9 points around the circle. And then there are triangles that connect some of the numbers with some of the other numbers. And it is based on Pythagorean geometry. I mean, it really has deep roots in geometry, actually, and speaks to the harmony in nature, actually the harmony in music, and also the harmony in personalities and people. Now, there can be disharmony in people, there can be disharmony in nature, and there can be disharmony in music. So it shows where the disharmony comes in and where you can find more harmony within yourself and with yourself and other people. It also works in terms of one's spiritual path if one is actively involved in as a seeker. So there are the nine types of people are generally called. One is the perfectionist or the reformer, somebody who's really interested in making sure things are right, which is a really good thing, but you can see that that also would create some problems. Type two is called the helper or the giver, and that person is, just as it sounds, out there offering help all the time, which is great, and then it can also cause problems for them because they help so much that then they don't feel like they're getting anything in return. Type three is the performer or the achiever, and that person is like your type A personality, working all the time, going after all the awards and accolades, which is really great, and then it can cause relationship problems. Type four is the romantic or the individualist, wanting very much to be different than or feeling very different than others, and both in an inferior way and also in a superior way. So that can be obviously have its good points and its bad points. Type five is the observer. It's always kind of standing back, that type of person. They might be, for an occupation, a photographer because they like to observe the world as opposed to participate really actively in it. Type six, that's Rusty and me, is called the loyal skeptic or the questioner. We're really interested in, working with people, yet we will take a rather skeptical stance. So again, with all the other types, there's an upside and a downside to that. Type seven is the enthusiast or the adventurer. They are really out there too, in the same way that the achiever, the three is. So the seven is always out there, with great ideas and making plans and starting businesses and this type of thing. It's hard for them to do the follow through. Because they're always looking for the next thing. Type eight is the boss. That's kind of your classic CEO who really will take charge of things and get stuff done. And that's great. We need those kind of leaders. And then sometimes people can get left behind. And then the nine is called the mediator or the peacemaker. And that person is, just as it sounds, really trying to make peace among people and within themselves. And it sounds really good, but in the way of trying to keep the peace, it can create a lack of peace at the same time. So it is a really wonderful way of looking at different people and understanding their motivations.
Now, my first question in regards to this is, do they change as you get older? Can you change your Enneagram with, say I really want to be a number eight. Can I work towards changing that to become a number eight, or is this a set, defined personality trait? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. it isn't possible to change it because it's like a default on the computer. We learn these types when we're growing up, and they become our basic default strategy for dealing with life. And they are bundled together with a set of beliefs about how the world works. And so it's very, very hard to change one's beliefs, particularly these that are pretty much hardwired in and pretty set by the time we're in our teens. However, what you can do is you can learn what the belief system is and then increase your range. It's just like, okay, I've got a particular body type and I'm trying to work out and make myself stronger and stuff, and I'm going to have particular limitations due to my own body structure and bone and all this kind of stuff, but I can increase my strength and my capability by working on it. So you're not stuck, but you will be stuck if you don't understand that you've got this type. A lot of people resist, whether it's the Jungian, Myers-Briggs types or the Enneagram types, because they think, oh, well, I don't want to be put in a box. But the thing is that we actually are already in a box and we don't realize it. And so once we can see what box we're in, we then can develop strategies to increase other aspects that are within our ability. And what's so cool with the brain research is that we now know, in the last 25 years, we now understand that our brains can change. Prior to 25 years ago, we thought we could not change our brains. And literally,
exactly.
So cool.
Oh, absolutely. And now they've acknowledged that the hippocampus actually regenerates.
Yep.
Which 15 years ago, the school of thought was nothing in the brain regenerates.
Yep.
So, as science gets better and technology gets better, we're really starting to debunk some of those myths. So,
Exactly.
What is the most exciting part about that for you and in your work?
Well, I think for me is that as a coach, I've always seen that people can change and grow and do amazing, amazing things that they didn't think that they could do. But now to have the science to verify that actually there is literally a biological change going on that they can see through the EEGs and the fMRI machines, I don't know. It's like, yeah, I can observe it and see it and cheer my clients on, but just to know that actually they have created a change in their brains, in their physiology, is so exciting. And I think that just the brain research, reading some of the studies that come out, it's just it illuminates the work that I'm already doing. And I just think it helps my clients, too. In fact, I have these little tiny thermometers that I'm using now with my clients where, by focused attention, by mindfulness training, you can hold on to this little tiny thermometer and get some biofeedback, and that you can actually, just through what you're doing with your mind, you can raise the thermometer, you can raise your body temperature. So it's a really cool feedback for the client to see, oh, wow, I'm doing this. Because I think a lot of us just feel like we don't really have very much power to do that kind of change or any kind of change in our lives. We're kind of stuck.
Now, do you think that by using the thermometers with your clients, it's giving them something tangible to motivate them and encourage them to continue? With meditation and yoga and research in regards to especially meditation, over the years your brain physically changes, but we don't actually see it unless we have these huge instruments that you don't have lying around your house.
Right.
You know what I mean? So what other tools would you use or suggest that the listeners to use to really acknowledge those changes, aside from these tiny thermometers? Is there anything else that...
Golly, I'm sure there are. I mean, you can go online, and there's a lot of product lines of things that that people are selling, and some of them are pretty expensive. For me, I'm interested in, I want my clients to get feedback because I think it's really important, because then they can actually, you know, they feel like they're making progress, because that's so important. So I think for me, the tools are having people keep learning logs, you know, just like, okay, you know, what did you learn last week when you tried this new way of trying to, you know, get a new job or whatever it was? And that is a good feedback tool, because if you do coaching over a couple of months, which is the best way to do it, because you're really looking for a lasting change, and you can't do a lasting change in one or two sessions, you can go back and then look in your learning log and see, oh, wow, yeah, I had forgotten that I was, you know, really scared to do that, or I had forgotten that I tried that and it actually led me someplace. And then I think just getting, becoming more mindful of your body is a great tool. Like I will sit in session and lead people through a meditation, and to have them just check in and see how it feels in the various different parts of their body, so that then when they're on their own, they can remember that feeling, what it felt like in their gut or in their heart, you know, or in their lower back, to get them back to that place that they experienced in meditation. So the thermometer is really the only sort of, you know, fancy, if you can call a thermometer fancy, glitzy way that I have people get feedback. But there are just other many, many things. It's just teaching awareness. It's just becoming conscious and aware of the capacity that we have in our bodies, in our very bodies, that we just forget because we're driving cars and rushing around with kids or making dinner or, you know, in really tough meetings or traveling bus, airplane, cars, and we really forget ourselves and the power really that we each individually have, not only to make ourselves feel more comfortable in the world, but also in our relationships. I forgot what question. Oh, my tools.
That's okay. No. I was trying to remember too, because I was so excited, and I was going to let you know that the journal that I had started with you when we first started a couple of years ago, is now my manifestation log.
Oh,
so,
that's a great term.
Yep, I dubbed it the manifestation log. So all of my goals and my dreams and my adventures that I'm going to continue pursuing, it's all in my book. So
it evolved from
just a book of thought to this tree of inspiration.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I thought you would find that exciting.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think you know this, that I used to be a writing teacher before I became a coach. It sort of was a natural segue for me, because the people I was helping with their writing were writing about things that, you know, were meaningful to them, and it just kind of turned into more coaching with the writing. And I learned a lot about how the writing process works, and it's so important. We can really use our writing to help us think better, think things through, and I think that's what you were doing initially, to, you know, sort of just think about your situation and what you were trying to figure out, and using the whether it's a computer or, you know, longhand on a piece of paper, it will assist you in really good, clear thinking. And you can have a lot of aha moments similar to you will sometimes have when you're talking with a friend or talking with a colleague, and just suddenly this idea will just kind of come out of nowhere and you're saying it. That's mm-hmm. the same kind of thing, you know, that can happen with writing and also, you know, talking to your coach.
Now, is that a service that you're still offering, is writing workshops and are you, I know at one point when we first started coaching a few years ago, that was something that you were offering as a service. Have you changed that? Or?
I don't do writing workshops per se, but I love helping people who are trying to write something, you know, sort of, again, accompany them on that journey of taking something through a first draft and into mm-hmm. More and more drafts to more completion. And there are people who are specifically writing coaches, too, who know a lot about the publishing world and how to get things published, which I don't know, but I certainly can help people in the, you know, to get it down to paper and in a way that is satisfying to them.
Awesome. Well, we have a few minutes left, and I wasn't sure if you still wanted to do one last one belief at a time.
Sure.
Piece.
Yeah. I mean, to come up with one that is, you know, current for you without, you know, not something that you want to share with the whole world, but
do you want me to we can definitely do it again. I think that would be fun.
Okay.
Let's see.
Your cute daughter Chloe, I can't imagine you have any stressful thoughts about her. She's so adorable.
She, boy, do I have stories to tell you. She is definitely going to be a CEO.
Yes.
She's incredible. But
yes.
And definitely a blessing. I can't think of any stressful thoughts.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
Oh, it's great. And I'm trying here. I'm stressed out because I can't think of stressful thoughts. Do you have one? Do you have a stressful belief?
Let's see. Well, okay, I am applying to become certified to receive government contracts, which is a big step for me because I haven't ventured out into that world. So I'm definitely nervous because I think that I won't know how to do it. I think it's something beyond my capacity. So you could do that with me if you want.
Sure. All right.
So I don't think I can do it.
I don't think I can do it. Is it true?
I can already feel my stomach hurting. Is it true? Yes, it is true.
Okay. And I'm trying to remember. Can you absolutely know that this is true?
No.
All right. How does your body react when you have this thought that you can't do it?
Well, images that come to my mind are I can just see a bunch of people, you know, sitting there sort of looking at me, and I'm, you know, don't know what I'm doing, and, you know, saying, you know, completely tongue-tied. My lower belly just immediately, even when I just said that to you when you asked, did I have any thoughts, just immediately, you know, fired up, and my digestive tract all the way along gets raw. What else happens? Well, I start to really worry. I can feel my jaw getting tight. I just don't feel good. It doesn't feel good.
So mostly in the digestive area, though?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I can feel it in my throat, too. Well, I guess that is digestion.
So Who would you be without the thought, I don't think I can do it?
Well, able to breathe better. Kind of blank, actually, which is actually feels better than having the thought. Just breathing, more relaxed, less tense. And without the thought, I can imagine myself, you know, being my normal, chatty, comfortable self, you know, running the training.
Okay.
Are we running out of time?
We are. I'm sorry.
Okay. Go ahead. No, you go.
So turn the thought around to the complete opposite.
So what was the thought?
I don't think I can do it.
I do think I can do it. I do think I can do it because I've done it before. I can think of specific instances where I've done it before and it was fine. I can think of specific instances where I had the thought and that was fine. I do think I can do it. I think I can do it if I'm not obsessed with thinking with this stressful story.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what do you think that the I don't think I can do it thought is doing for you?
Great question. Well, I think it's back to my Enneagram type. I think it's trying to keep me safe and secure. You know, just like in my usual routine, seeing clients one-on-one. I'm very familiar with how that works. I don't feel nervous about that at all. So I think it's trying to protect me.
And what do you think it's trying to protect you from?
Well, danger, which, of course, is what my Enneagram type is all about, is trying to keep me out of danger.
You know, oh, no, Mr. Robinson.
Yeah. Those people out there, they're dangerous, you know, those people who work for the government. Oh, my God. I'm kidding.
No, I know. Well, as we wrap up, I want to thank everybody with much gratitude to all of the beloveds out there that have logged in and listened today. And Anne, do you mind giving us your website one more time?
Not at all. Thank you, Rusty. It's www.annewatring.com, and that's spelled AnneWotring. And thank you so
Excellent.
Much, Rusty. This was so great. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you for joining, and it was great. And I really, really appreciate you dialing in.
Yeah.
So next week, for all of our listeners, I will have Dr. Sherry Forkham on from California to talk a little bit about her journey through being diagnosed with celiac disease and some coping mechanisms. So please dial in next week, Wednesday, at 1 Eastern Standard Time. And again, I hope you have a glorious and beautiful day. And thank you for listening to Living and Thriving.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.